The publisher George Merriam once described a sense of humour as the oil of life's engine. Without it, he said, the machinery creaks and groans. I guess he meant that humour is a kind of social lubricant. It helps us get on with people, to connect with them, and that actually helps us get stuff done. Of course, it's a skillful thing to use humour well, and if you're not confident with it, you might choose to opt out altogether. But before you conclude that you're just not cut out for comedy, I urge you to listen to this episode because there may be hope for you after all. My name is Andrew Thorpe. Welcome to Leaning Forward. I remember seeing a cartoon a few years ago. I think it was in Private Eye magazine, showing a man on his deathbed, and this was a series entitled Things You're Unlikely to Hear. And the sentence he uttered, as his time was coming to an end, was, I wish I'd had more Twitter followers. It underlined the absurdity of the type of things that we worry about in the digital age, and absurdity is a theme that we'll touch upon in this podcast. Because today we're looking at what makes things funny, and how we can use humour as a way to connect with people. Now, I've recorded a couple of episodes before on a similar topic, the latest one being about the power of improvisation. And I think it's quite interesting that the most popular episodes so far on Leaning Forward have all been about conversation. So I guess listeners want to learn how to perform better in these improvised situations. And of course, using humour is a key part of that. Now, it's worth considering a few aspects to all this. Firstly, there's finding things to say or share with others that might make them smile. Second, there's how we say them, how do we verbalise them, because it's easy to murder a perfectly good line and then get the tumbleweed response. And third, there's the way that we react when others share something with us that they think is funny. I work mostly with technically trained professionals who have deep expertise in their field, but they don't always connect with others on a human level. They want to feel more at ease, especially in these conversational situations, and they want to make others feel at ease with them. And one thing I often hear is, oh, I'm just not a funny person, or I've never been able to tell a joke, or I tried humour once and it didn't work. And I think this might be a kind of cop-out. It's a get-out card. It's a way of opting out of an area that perhaps people find uncomfortable or where they lack confidence. I think they misunderstand what it means to be funny or to use humour to engage with others. It's not about telling jokes. That's an extremely hard thing to do well, and you need to be very careful what material you use and in what circumstances. There's an American academic called Jennifer Acker, and she's a humour expert. Yes, that's a thing. And I really like a line that she came out with in a recent interview. She said, don't look for what's funny, look for what's true. In other words, you're finding things in the everyday world that have comedic potential, and there's oodles of the stuff around. Observational comedians in the UK, for example, like Peter Kay and Sarah Millican, make a very good living talking about the trials, the tribulations, and the absurdity of everyday life. And like good storytellers, they're reminding us of the things we know already. But maybe they're helping us see them through a different lens. And the other concern people have when it comes to using humour in a professional environment is that business is about serious things. People worry about mixing humour with an important topic, but it can be done. Just take a look at the TED Talks by Sir Ken Robinson, Brené Brown and Sugata Mitra. I'll put some links in the notes for these. They successfully combine some really serious, profound wisdom with a healthy dose of humour, and that juxtaposition seems to make the message more palatable and memorable. And in conversational situations like meetings, it can change the vibe and provide a welcome release of tension. So let's take a look at the first hurdle to humour, the first one in that list, and that's finding material that's got comedic potential. Now, there are many models and lists of what constitutes funny, so I've decided to narrow this down to the five misses. No, I'm not talking about wives here. No, words beginning with miss, M-I-S. So we have misalignment, misdirection, mismatches, misunderstandings, and misfortunes. And the common denominator in all of them is contrast. That's the contrast between the way things should be and the way things are. And it's what most humour experts in their white lab coats call a violation, or more precisely, a benign violation. Have you ever seen the Fenton the dog clip on YouTube? A man loses control of his dog in a London park, and that single creature causes a massive herd of deer to sweep back and forth across the screen as the man yells at the pet in vain. And me and a few million other viewers found it hilarious because no apparent harm was caused. But it wouldn't have been funny if the dog or the deer had been seriously injured, not benign. But let's get back to my list. Let's start with misalignment or awkward juxtapositions. There's a town near where I live in the UK with a medical centre. Nothing interesting about that. But do you know what's next door? A funeral parlour. Then there's an image I came across a while ago. It's used in a talk by Seth Godin, the marketing guru. And it's a group of firefighters posing for a photograph, rather like a football team would, in two rows with folded arms. But behind them, we see a burning building. And you think, hang on a minute, shouldn't you be putting that out? And then Seth reveals that the building has been deliberately set alight because it's a training exercise. And apparently it's a tradition for the team to pose for a photograph before dealing with the blaze. We're going to take a quick break now to hear from an actor, writer, coach, and fellow podcaster, Jackie Goddard. Her show is called Power to Speak, and she interviews a range of wonderful people, each of whom has a fascinating and inspiring story to tell. Here's just a taste of what you can expect.
My creativity at its best, it's a real exploring. It's a surprising journey.
I think creativity is just
the antidote to insanity, and it's productive originality.
Surprising answers, inspiring stories, motivational, educational, inspirational. Wise Words with Power to Speak, the podcast. Find us on your favourite podcast platform or watch on YouTube at Power to Speak, the podcast, with me, Jackie Goddard.
Thank you, Jackie. And now back to our theme. Let's look at misdirection. I think it was a Norwegian commercial that I came across on YouTube where a businessman leaves his house to drive to work on a very cold morning. He's parked on the street and his car is covered in ice and snow. So he gets busy clearing the windows, slipping over in the process. And when he's finally finished, he presses his key fob to open the car, and the car next to his goes beep beep. Now, that kind of humour takes us in one direction and then suddenly veers off in a different one. And it's the reveal that gets the reaction. And you can do this verbally as well. So, of course, in these situations, it's important to show who's boss and really put your foot down. So I apologised to my wife and did what she asked. Now, what about mismatches? So, for example, people behaving in an unexpected way. And again, it's a kind of incongruity. You've got the example of a very, very large man with a squeaky, high-pitched voice. And one of my favourite comedy movies is Airplane, which is really a parody of all those disaster movies from the 70s like Airport. And to a large extent, its humour comes from seeing actors who were known for serious roles. People like Robert Stack and Leslie Nielsen. And they're playing it straight while saying the most outrageous lines. And if you've seen the film, you'll probably be able to complete that famous Leslie Nielsen line, "And don't call me." And you can think of puns or wordplay as a form of incongruity as well. Seinfeld, the American comedian, made a lovely observation about the word building. He says, "It looks like it's finished. They should call it a built." And I guess he has a point. Now, misunderstandings are a great source of comedic potential. You've got the famous four candle sketch by the two Ronnies, the most exasperating piece of customer service imaginable. You've got the two Scotsmen in a modern voice activated elevator who can't get to the 11th floor because when the American sounding elevator voice asks, "Which floor, please?" they keep saying, "11. And that gets them nowhere. And I'll put a link to these clips in the notes. Now, both these misunderstandings came from strong accents. And I was misunderstood once, and I never thought I had a strong accent. I met someone in a noisy room, and he asked me what I did for a living. And I said, "Well, I tell stories." But he clearly didn't hear that because a few minutes later he introduced me to a friend of his and he said, "This is Andrew, he sells storage." Now, what about misfortunes? Do you remember the man giving the online interview to the BBC about security? When his kids wander in, this was during the pandemic period, and his wife tries to grab them back, and all the while the man is gamely doing his best to continue. It's one of the great moments of live TV. The author Bill Bryson brings us joy through tales of his own misfortunes. I love his description of his first game of English football and the experience of heading a ball. Again, it's built on contrast between the way it should have felt, a gentle bonk, and the way it actually felt, like heading a bowling ball. And I suspect there was a bit of exaggeration when he claimed to have the word mitre imprinted on his forehead. But it makes the story better. Incidentally, Stephen Fry makes an interesting point about Brits finding comedy in characters who fail heroically. People like Basil Fawlty and David Brent. In his view, American humour is more about cleverly scripted wisecracks. And again, there's a link that I'll include where he's actually interviewed about this particular thing, the difference between American humour and British humour. So there you have a few ideas about where to find the funny stuff in everyday life. But there's another consideration here, and that's about how you deliver these humorous observations. In other words, do you do them justice in the act of telling? Now, there isn't time here to cover the skill of performative storytelling, but in the notes, I'll direct you to another episode of Leaning Forward about telling anecdotes. Of course, you can weave some funny material into a talk, a pre-prepared presentation, a PPP. And one of the best times to do this is right at the start, because it gets people relaxed. Many speakers use humour to grab the audience's attention at the beginning and to get them relaxed and receptive to what follows. But you'll really come into your own when you incorporate humour into conversations. So you might go straight in with, "I've just seen the weirdest thing." Or you might be triggered by something someone else has said. "You've just reminded me of that time." You might just see a moment that presents an opportunity. Suppose you were out jogging and you had to pass a police officer standing by the road holding a speed gun. It's got comedic potential, but would you say anything? If the thing you say is benign and it's said nicely to someone who's probably having a dreary day, it's likely to raise a smile. And finally, what about the humorous things others say to you? Again, assuming it's benign, it will help you bond with the other person if you both find it funny. So give them a little encouragement. But beware of that classic conversational trap when it comes to telling stories. "Oh, that's nothing, you should hear this." That type of story competition, when it becomes a test of who has the best anecdote, is one sure way to lose friends. There are too many types of humour to do them justice in this episode, so I focused mostly on what you might observe that could be shared with an audience, whether that's in conversation or from a stage. If you're confident, you might already use gentle teasing as a way to bond with others, but use it sparingly and with people who are confident in themselves and likely to see that your comment comes from a place of affection. You might dabble with sarcasm and irony, but not everyone can read where you're coming from. Bill Bryson writes about an exchange with his neighbour. The author had just returned to the US from Britain and was moaning about his flight being delayed, luggage misplaced, etc. "Who did you fly with?" asked the neighbour. "I don't know," replied Bill. "They were all strangers." And the result was a long silence and a confused expression. My parting thought here is that humour is everywhere because life surrounds us. And humour is really about the realities of living a life. When it's used well, when you draw attention to those benign violations that people immediately recognise, it's got the power to bond us together in a deep and joyful way. Humour doesn't just belong to professional comedians or those with what Barry Cryer once described as funny bones. It belongs to all of us, and it just takes a little courage and a lot of practice. That's all for now from Leaning Forward. I hope you've enjoyed this episode and that it's given you some practical ideas and inspiration. And do check out my fellow podcaster Jackie Goddard and her show Power to Speak. You can find it where you normally listen to your podcasts or on YouTube at Power to Speak. The podcast. Thanks again for tuning in. Do join us next time.